Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. We are knee-deep in election season, and like many people, I'm sure, folks are experiencing and talking about election anxiety. In fact, there's not a lot it seems like most of us all agree on, but one thing's for sure, I think we can all agree that the election season, this election season, certainly is heightening anxiety for just about all of us. So today's episode is going to be all about election anxiety. We want to go ahead and take a look at the why, some of the interesting new data we're seeing about election anxiety and political stressors, and why that's a little bit different than some other types of anxiety or stressors we can experience. And also want to, of course, take some time and think through what we can all do to help better navigate anxiety, whether it's our own individual experiences of anxiety or whether it's helping navigate anxiety within our communities, especially in the community of our workplaces. So we are going to dive in and take a look at what we can do and how we can better understand election anxiety. Let's start with, of course, a definition. You know me, I love a definition. I love starting from a place of shared understanding. So one of the things we want to look at as we discuss election anxiety today is, what is election anxiety? And really, it can be also described as political anxiety, but it is fear, stress, worry caused by political outcomes and processes. So in our example, fear, anxiety around the election process and outcomes of the election. So that could be, you know, who are the elected officials, what different legislation gets passed, what type of behaviors folks may show up with during the process and post-election as well. So these are the things we're really thinking about when we think about election anxiety. And certainly, election anxiety, these stressors can tie into other existing or predispositions for anxiety, stress, depression, suicidal thoughts. So there is an implication there as well. That said, fortunately, we have a lot of new data coming out around election anxiety and this specific kind of phenomenon around political stressors. And this data really ticked up following the 2016 election. More research started happening. So we have more information to work from. And what's really interesting is when we think about, someone who has high levels of stress or anxiety, perhaps general anxiety disorder, they may be more likely to become stressed by elections. And that's actually not the case. Early studies suggest that political anxiety or election anxiety and overall anxiety are actually different. In other words, people who report feeling anxious about politics aren't just people who have high levels of anxiety overall. So this is really something that's quite unique. And even if you're someone who maybe doesn't tend to get anxious and you are experiencing a lot of anxiety around the election, that is not uncommon. That is something that we are seeing, you know, mirrored in the data. One thing that's important to note and take into account is political stressors, elections are complicated. And there's a lot that comes into play with them. And they can really trigger a variety of emotions, worry, sadness, despair, outrage, disgust, frustration. And political events, elections, can have both short and long-term repercussions that can be felt throughout society, felt throughout our lives. Also, let's talk about something that has become even more prominent in the most recent elections we've seen, is that elections tend to highlight conflict between groups, which is high stress, high anxiety for many people. And it can also have real life social or relationship ramifications. I'm sure we've all heard or seen a story, maybe some of us have even experienced this, where a relationship you have with someone is changed or damaged or unable to be repaired because of a political stance they've taken, or just stress related to those relationships because differences in political opinions. All of those things are really heightened during election season. And because in these moments, this can become so pervasive, for some individuals, politics, the political landscape, the ongoing conversations about this can turn into a form of chronic or toxic stress that can become very challenging and very overwhelming. Of course, there is kind of the evidence we all see, we all feel around us related to, hey, elections make me anxious, or elections make folks around me anxious, or I have a harder time with my mental health during election seasons. Absolutely. And those experiences are important for us to be able to rely on, lean on. Certainly, we want to hear stories from ourselves and from other folks. But it's also great now that we do have this research that's been happening for, you know, a little less than a decade now, that's very focused on political stress, election anxiety type work. We have some good data that we can look at now as well in terms of just how widespread and what a widely felt phenomenon it is that folks experience when we are in election season. In national surveys that were conducted during the 2018 midterm and 2020 presidential elections, 40% of U.S. adults said politics was a prominent source of stress in their lives. And in follow-up questions, what we see is lots of Americans report that because of politics, they lose sleep, they have damaged relationships with social media, and maybe can't stop paying attention to social media, have a lot harder time kind of disconnecting. It's also important to note that surveys showcase that 1 in 20 people also reported being so distressed about politics that they had suicidal thoughts. Obviously, this is very extreme. But when we think about some of the potential outcomes, some of the discussion points that we see during election season, how honestly we talk about politics and how it is presented, both in common conversation and by candidates and parties themselves, things are presented in a very high stakes manner, oftentimes about identity or things that folks hold very close as well. So those things certainly can be exacerbating, can trigger, you know, really extreme thoughts, can trigger, you know, a serious mental health emergency. Another thing that we talk about quite frequently as it relates to politics, you know, in the last decade plus, is the increased polarization among individuals within the country, increased polarization among the two dominant political parties. And so there's some good data, I don't know if it's good, interesting data that helps us better understand some of those impacts of, you know, significant partisanship. You know, one study found people who said their state was becoming more polarized were more likely to develop anxiety or depression. And when people felt politically dissimilar from the average voter in their state, they also reported experiencing worse physical health. So certainly, these are things that really have a lot of impact on individuals and how they experience their lives during the election, because it's pretty hard to get away from discussions, news about the election cycle, especially when we're looking at presidential elections, big ticket type elections. So with that, I do want to talk about how news, the media, social media can kind of play into fueling that election anxiety as well. Certainly, we can talk about increased polarization, kind of changing the shape of how we're experiencing politics in America. I also think it's really important that we reflect on how media and social media have changed our relationship and exposure to politics. The news media is always available, always on. You know, I have a personal story I remember reflecting on. I have an Apple Watch. So many of us have an Apple or some kind of smartwatch that we use. And it would pop up throughout the day when I least expected it. It would pop up a little story about the news. I would get a news alert. And one day during the COVID-19 pandemic, I turned off my alerts finally because I just could not take the constant information, especially when I wasn't intentionally kind of plugging in to hear that information, constant information about something that I found stressful. And this is happening for many of us when we think about the election. Certainly the news is frequently covering the election. If we, you know, zero into news channels specifically, they are often covering stories 24/7. So it's very hard to move away from that. Also, we can experience some kind of unprecedented scenarios that have come up even just in this election cycle. Those receive a lot of additional coverage as well. On top of all of that, on top of kind of traditional media coverage of the election, which media companies want viewers, they want folks to be engaged and following and watching and listening to what they're talking about. Social media is almost the Wild West of news, information, political discourse. And for many of us, it is very anxiety provoking, just in terms of relationship, the misinformation that gets spread, positive, negative takes, personal attacks that can be related to the election. It can become very, very difficult to move past. And so one thing that I highly recommend, and we'll get into this more as we talk about ways to manage election anxiety, is really think about your exposure to the election, to politics, how you want to engage in news and information to really balance and help you find that right balance of getting the information you want and you need, and also managing, you know, any anxiety, any triggers that may show up. One great way to consider, especially if you know, tone, body language, tone of voice, kind of the energy someone is bringing with them to news, reading your news is a great opportunity to kind of help pivot away from some of those challenging behaviors that can show up as you're approaching it as well. But I mean, honestly, it's really hard to get away from any information about the election. You know, it's one of those things that comes up in conversation. You know, there were yard signs up, there are people wearing shirts, people knocking doors, lots of conversation, maybe even by the water cooler. So it can be really challenging to avoid all conversation, but just be thoughtful about how, you know, the news, how media, social media can be contributing to maybe that 24/7 news cycle, that inescapable information continuing to pull through. It is certainly something that can exacerbate or can be a really strong contributor to why folks are experiencing high anxiety. And I mean, there's a lot of social media opportunities we have out there: Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, all the different things. And it can be really easy to kind of pick up and you know, have a little moment of dissociation, you know, or start doom scrolling, really being thoughtful about how you take in information, how you're spending that time. If you are experiencing election anxiety, if you are worried about, you know, potential impacts to your mental health, have a plan, have something you're thinking about to really limit how you're taking in that information. So let's talk about some strategies to navigate and manage our own election anxiety, others' elections anxiety, election anxiety kind of showing up in the workplace. Number one, let's talk about the workplace first. I don't think there's an easy kind of area of conversation for this, but let's talk about the workplace as a place to start. So number one thing I can recommend leaders, HR professionals, individual managers, individuals do around the election is if you do not have kind of policies, processes in place to navigate how folks are communicating about politics, about the election, what's okay, what's not okay. I think really laying those ground rules is going to be super important. Just so folks are really clear on, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. There is a great podcast episode on I Hate It Here's podcast that talks specifically about elections in the workplace. And there's some great stories there as well. If you're not setting clear expectations up front around, you know, hey, how we're going to approach this, it just makes things more challenging. So this is one of those moments where clarity is kindness. Make sure your teams, you know what's appropriate, know what's not, and kind of what's the comfort level within your organization around folks discussing politics, folks kind of showing up in political discourse, and what your organization wants to do to support folks who may be feeling uneasy. A big thing I will also add with workplaces, probably not everyone in your workplace has the same political views. Even if there is a strong thread or something that's common, this is a moment that for many people, elections become very personal. Some of the things that are talked about or kind of fodder during election season can be very closely held beliefs or a part of someone's identity. So want to be really thoughtful around how you're approaching elections organizationally and as a leader, so you're not alienating your employees. Of course, your organization's missions, values, purpose, got to stick to them. That's important. And certainly that can kind of feel like it's getting muddied or messy sometimes when there are certain things that become items of discussion. But just be thoughtful around how different folks may be feeling. And this is especially important when we think about power dynamics in the workplace. So this is another space where power dynamics in the workplace becomes really important. I talk about power dynamics all the time. I think it is a huge source of challenge in our society, but certainly in our workplace. And we know that trauma at its core is based on an imbalance of power. So this becomes really important when we think about being trauma-informed. So when you are in a position of power in your organization, and that power is very individual-based, it doesn't mean you have to be the CEO to have power within a relationship. When you have power and you are outspoken about political opinions, outspoken about certain things, it can have an outsized impact on your employees, on your teams. Now, I'm not saying do or do not talk about certain things. You have to do what feels genuine to you as a leader. You have to do what makes sense within your organization. But I can tell you it can be increasingly uncomfortable for someone who works for you who may have a different opinion if you continue to talk about it. I had someone I worked for several years ago now. It's been quite a few years ago. And this person had very strong political opinions, political beliefs that I would say were in opposition to my thoughts, my beliefs. And he was quite effusive about them frequently within our work environment. And I found it uncomfortable from a professional relationship standpoint, but I also found that it became something where really undermined our relationship overall. That's an extreme case. Certainly, I've worked with others, I've partnered with others on kind of all sides of the political spectrum, and I think we were able to maintain great working relationships. It's just being thoughtful about your positional power, your role in the workplace, and how expressing you know, your opinion strongly or, you know, very specific or what others may consider extreme viewpoints can have consequences. And I think we all know that by now, as it relates to some of our relationships over the course of the last few years and how politics have impacted that. So certainly make sure you have a policy, make sure you're being thoughtful about how you're showing up as a leader. The two biggest things I would recommend for folks thinking about how can we address this in the workplace. Next thing I will say is I need you to really check back into your DEI anti-harassment policies, equal opportunity policies, and really kind of know them inside out and make sure political rhetoric that kind of veers into something that might be a violation of your company policies, you understand that and you have clarity there. I think there are ways for folks to decide to communicate their values, who they're voting for, those different things in a way that doesn't violate your policies, that doesn't need to make folks uncomfortable in the workplace. And if they do, they need to be held accountable for violating policies. It's one of those things we can give folks an opportunity to share if they'd like to, but also we need to kind of hold back to the type of environment we're creating. Along those lines, we also want to make sure we don't make folks feel pressured to share their political beliefs, their political affiliations, who they're voting for, if they're voting. I think the safest is, you know, a campaign to encourage folks to take time to vote, to participate in voting, if they're eligible to do so. But I think also recognize that for many people, this is very personal. They're not willing to share, you know, if they're voting, who they're voting for. And we should absolutely respect that. If someone doesn't want to engage in these conversations, someone doesn't want to participate, I think that that's something to consider, to be thoughtful about in the workplace as well. There are many, many, many things we can think about when it comes to the workplace and, you know, managing election anxiety. But the last one I'll really highlight is thinking about how we show up post-election. So what's really tricky about elections is, and I hate using this because it feels disingenuous. It doesn't really align with my beliefs to say someone wins, someone loses. I think, you know, democracy happens is ideally what we're talking about. But there is, you know, someone won the election, someone lost the election. A bill passed, a bill didn't pass. And if you feel strongly, have been working towards those, you're really engaged, you know, you have high stakes tied into this election for some reason, folks could be really excited about the outcome of election or are really, really disappointed or perhaps even distraught. And I think we've seen that play out in very different ways over the last few election cycles, that there are reactions for individuals and collectively that show up and may show up in the workplace. So just highly recommend, you know, thought and care for how folks are showing up post-election. So those are just some high-level ideas to think about managing election stress for the workplace. Let's talk a little bit about some ideas for how you individually can manage your own election anxiety. First and foremost, make sure you are setting your own limits, understanding, you know, what works best for you and setting the right boundaries. You're like me, you're getting text messages from local politicians, the commercials. I'm in a swing state. I'm in Arizona. The commercials are nonstop. I get flyers in my mailbox almost every day. And there's a constant stream of news, notifications, social media, news websites, and even just all of that information can trigger anxiety. It can be tough. And for some folks, it may be easier to just decide to stay out of the loop. And that's perfectly okay. But if you do want to stay engaged and also manage your anxiety, because for some of us, being out of the loop can cause us anxiety as well. It's a tough balance being, you know, staying enough in the loop to feel like we have the information or need, but not being so inundated, we're overwhelmed. So this might be setting some boundaries for yourself. I mentioned the story about turning off the notifications on my Apple Watch. I have never turned them back on. It has been an amazing game changer for me. Maybe it's you only watch the nightly news. Maybe it's you only check the news on your phone once a day. Maybe it's muting certain social media accounts. Maybe it's setting limits to how much time you spend on social media each day. What makes sense for you? Really think about and you know, zero in on what makes the most sense for you and build your exposure, limit your exposure in a way that makes the most sense. One thing I will say here, and I took this advice from Catherine Manning, who wrote the book, The Empathetic Workplace. Social media is a huge source of compassion fatigue and secondary trauma as well, especially when we're visually seeing someone experiencing trauma, someone experiencing harm. So again, this is where we get back to reading about news events. For some of us, that can be less triggering, and we're able to manage the kind of negative impacts of that news a little bit better if we're not seeing the imagery. So just something to think about, something to consider. I know there's also a lot of really traumatic and distressing news going on in the world outside of the election as well. So take this all into account to manage your own mental health. How can you manage and have a strong strategy for social media, for media and news overall? Another big one is avoid heated conversations. A lot of anxiety for folks is navigating stressful conversations, relationship challenges. This can be something I know for me, I have some pretty strong beliefs and I don't really want to have arguments with people about them anymore in my life. I've passed, especially on the internet, I've passed that point by and large. And so for me, this is something where I just avoid kind of that heated conversation, those things where I think this is going to make me stressed, give me high anxiety, especially when we're talking with someone with opposing views. It's so okay to set boundaries and saying, you know, I appreciate that you want to discuss politics. You know, I just, for me, it's better for me if we don't talk about that, or I prefer not to discuss that. And you can use this in the office. You can use this on social media. It absolutely works on how you can better relate to folks and respect folks who don't want to have those discussions with you. Like, we all have different things kind of informing how we respond to political information. We all have different stories. So, you know, something that you're really passionate about, you really want to talk about, and maybe something you don't think someone would be uncomfortable with, they might be. So just be respectful, you know, ask for permission, you know, avoid those kind of high stakes conversations or remove yourself from them to avoid, you know, that high level of anxiety and challenge. Another thing to think about is, for many of us, the election anxiety is about kind of everything going on right in this moment. But for many more of us, it's also what happens after the election. And also, you can be stressed or anxious about both of those things as well. I don't want to erase that experience. But when we think about what could happen or what will happen if a certain outcome happens in an election, we can start to spiral. My husband actually has a great term for this. I'll steal it from him for this, but negative forecasting. We're negative forecasting what we think might happen in election season. And for those of us who have, you know, anxiety disorders, I have generalized anxiety disorder, it can be really easy to start to ruminate and think about worst case scenarios and let those start to spend lots of time kind of wiggling around in your head. So it's really important for you to try and manage those thoughts and really, you know, challenge your thinking, challenge extreme assumptions. If you have a therapist or a support group you work with, maybe, you know, talking through some of those outcomes or some of those fears can help work through them. Even a trusted friend or partner, really kind of challenge some of those negative thoughts that may come up when you're kind of forecasting what happens post-election, when, you know, the stakes can be very high. Make sure the next ones are, you know, you're probably tired of hearing about this, but self-care, self-care, self-care. And I'll say it again, you know, self-care is not all green juice and massages. It's some of the hard stuff that we need to do to make sure we are cared for. So that includes, you know, finding ways to exercise. Exercise can flood our brains with endorphins, helps us lower depression and anxiety. And it can be something as simple as, you know, I have my regular yoga practice. It could be a daily walk, running, strength training. Maybe you'll take your dog for a walk, dancing. You like to dance, put on a record, you know, take a few minutes, but really just take a chance to exercise, de-stress. Another huge part of self-care to call out is making sure you're getting good sleep. Also with self-care, it can be a lot of different things. You know, do you have a hobby you like to engage in instead of, you know, doom scrolling on Instagram? Could you pick up a new book that you want to read? Is there a friend you could talk to who you know you can have conversations outside of the election? Really think of your self-care strategy as an election self-care strategy to kind of get you through this moment in time, this season. And some of that self-care could be, you know, seeking help, seeking support. If you have a relationship with an established therapist, highly recommend, you know, exploring your feelings you're having with them. You can also find a variety of different services available. You know, obviously, if you need immediate help or assistance, you know, there's 988 Lifeline. NAMI has a helpline, which is 1-800-950-NAMI. So 6264, the Crisis Text Line, the Trevor Project, and Trans Lifeline. And all of these are linked in the show notes as well. So if you need support, you need help, as I mentioned earlier in the statistics, election anxiety can be exceptionally triggering to certain people, and it can trigger a mental health crisis. So certainly get those resources, get access to additional support. And the last thing I will say is, you know, make sure you're engaging in self-compassion. Hopefully, if you are feeling anxious about the election, at the end of this conversation, at the very least, you feel like you are not alone. And you certainly are not. This is something that is a challenge for so many of us. And there are ways to move through it, to get help, to find ways to kind of cope in a positive way with a challenging moment in time. I would also say, as you're considering and working through this, keep in mind that although elections do showcase that heightened experience of anxiety, we also know that anxiety does dissipate post-election. So it is very interesting to know that elections do tend to increase anxiety. Those studies also point to resilience in the face of elections and find that anxiety and depressive symptoms tend to fade in the days or weeks following an election. And this data is from 2020. So certainly, you know, there are repercussions for elections. Certainly do not want to undervalue that, but also know that data shows that this could just be a moment and you will be able to navigate it, especially if you're leveraging the right information, the right resources. I am so glad you joined me. I hope this helped you think about election anxiety that you may be experiencing, or, you know, this could be a way to help you support folks you know who may be experiencing election anxiety, and know that, you know, we'll all get through this and move forward to a place past the specific triggering stressors of politics. Thank you all for listening in. Until next time, be well.